Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
And we're pleased to welcome Rhode Island's top federal prosecutor, U.S. Attorney Peter Nerona. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
New criminal charges were brought against three former state reps in each of the first 3 weeks in January. In the most serious case, former House Finance Chairman Ray Gallison has agreed to plead guilty to fraud charges. Our guest, Peter Nerona, seems increasingly frustrated by the persistence of corruption in Rhode Island. So, U.S. Attorney, beyond prosecution, what do you think needs to be done to reduce corruption in Rhode Island?
And I think the frustration is probably born of having been in the job now for nearly 8 years, and the parade of cases continues. I don't think Rhode Island is unique in that regard, but we have obviously our share of these kinds of cases. So what can be done? Well, the obvious is we need to continue as members of law enforcement, you know, to be vigilant and follow these cases, run these cases to ground, and to aggressively prosecute them. I think the public, you know, needs to continue to cooperate with law enforcement. I think back, I was asked a question recently about this very topic, and I think back to the North Providence corruption case that we did sort of relatively early on in my tenure, when a citizen came forward, Paul Carancy, and just went to the FBI, into our office, and talked about what he was aware of. I think that's really important. I think citizens coming forward and going to law enforcement and bringing us these issues. So I think it's important that the public continue to recognize that they have an important role in this fight. And I think it's important that all of us as public officials, you know, recognize that when someone engages in this behavior, that, you know, it is fundamentally improper behavior. I do think that I have seen in my tenure sort of a change in attitude on the part of some public officials that looks at this behavior, even when it's not in their public life, as in the case with Ray Gallison, but in their private life, that this is something that a public official should be, you know, strongly criticized for, that we don't make the separation between one's public and private life. I don't view us as people as having silos in that regard.
Let me hold you.
Been a shift in that regard here.
Scott, what do you think it would take to reduce corruption in Rhode Island?
I'd love to see, as I think we've mentioned before, random audits of campaign finance, these campaign finance kitties, so-called, that a lot of our state reps and senators have. It seemed to me if you had an IRS-like system where they didn't know they were being audited, it might keep more people in line. The other thing is the voters have to be a little more careful. If that person who's running for state rep, for instance, if you don't think he or she has a visible means of support, then you probably don't want to send him to the state house.
Scott, you make an excellent point about how the public has a role here, and that's what Peter Nerona said too. But Maureen, many people are apathetic in Rhode Island. What would it take to overcome that?
Well, I think Peter talked about this in the sense that you change people's attitudes. I subscribe to the broken windows theory, that you just don't let the small things slide. I really think, and I've said this before, that sets a different tone, and not only in terms of elected officials, but also in terms of the public. They become aware that most people don't know this is all going on, and I think by knowing it, it changes the culture, and that's what we need.
Okay, we need to move on. Peter Nerona, you were appointed as U.S. Attorney by President Obama. The expectation is, with President Trump now in office, that someone else will be appointed to succeed you. Have you heard anything on that?
You know, I haven't, other than what we heard just before the inauguration of President Trump, that we were asked to stay on, you know, to kind of steward the office until a replacement could be named. And so I haven't heard much, really anything since that time. You know, we've been focused on continuing the work that we're doing, and there's plenty of it. There's some things I wanted to finish. Gallison was one. If I'd had to leave by the inauguration, I would have missed it, I think, by a business day. That would have been somewhat disappointing, I'll be candid. So I'm glad we were able to at least get that to the point it was. Talking to kids about opioids and other issues are things that I've been focusing on and continuing to do that.
And we're going to talk more about the opioid issue shortly. But looking ahead, there is speculation that you might run for attorney general next year. What do you say?
You know, I'm not focused on anything, Ian, right now, other than trying to do the job I have right now well. And I think it's really important that Rhode Islanders know that I'm focused on the job I currently have. There's plenty of me to focus on, and you know, we can get into some of that. But I know my time to step down is coming, obviously, and so when that happens, my plan is to take some time off, sit with my wife, sit with my kids, and think about what's best for us as a family. I will tell you that I've been in public service now since leaving a large Boston law firm 20 years ago, and I have loved every year that I've been in public service. There's something about it that has always been very rewarding to me, and so I hope to serve in some way going forward, but I haven't come to any conclusions yet about what that might be.
Maureen, in the past, we've seen how U.S. attorneys like Lincoln Amon and Sheldon Whitehouse have pursued political office in Rhode Island. How do you see Peter Noronha potentially stacking up as a candidate?
Well, I have to say, I think you'd be particularly well-suited because of your position. We know now that there's a real tension between enforcement and regulation between federal and state. And with the Trump administration, it's only going to get more and more difficult. And so as the state attorney general, I think you'd be in a particularly good spot to be able to navigate these very troubled waters and perform, I think, in a very positive way. So I say go for it.
Well, I appreciate that.
Scott, we could see a crowded field on the Democratic side for attorney general next year. There's speculation about Clay Pell. State Rep. Bob Craven seems interested, and there could be others. How do you see the outlook?
It all depends whether our guest here likes rubber chicken and raising money. It's a much different, running for attorney general is much different than being the top federal prosecutor in the state. It's a political job. You've got to go out and meet and greet and do all the kind of political circuit chores that you don't have to do as a federal prosecutor.
And we're running a little short on time here, but our guest Peter Noronha has expressed concern about the opioid crisis in Rhode Island. In fact, during the Ray Gallison news conference, you said it's unfortunate that prosecuting corruption cases takes away from the time you have to do on outreach on opioids and overdoses. These numbers of deaths keep climbing from where you sit. What needs to be done to improve the situation?
There are three parts of it. One is enforcement. I think we know what needs to happen there, and that needs to continue to happen. But prevention and treatment are critical. We could spend more time than you have parsing through each one of those things, but we have to make treatment available. We have to make it affordable. It has to be covered by insurance, and because you can't beat this problem without medically assisted treatment from everyone I've spoken to, and I've spoken to a lot of people about it. And then on the prevention side, we really have to, I think, fundamentally change the way we treat pain and chronic pain, moving away from opioids and turning to other measures, because it's that connection between the prescription opioids and the illegal narcotics that is so fundamental and also so dangerous.
How much worse will the situation get before it gets better?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I think the state over the last couple of years, with the leadership of the governor and members of the General Assembly, has really made some good progress in the fight. But as that progress has been made, this wild card of fentanyl has been injected into the problem. And that's really what's causing the deaths these days. And so until we get a handle on the fentanyl problem, you know, I don't think that we're going to turn the corner. And that's a real challenge.
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott?
Great to be here.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And U.S. Attorney Peter Noronha.
Thanks, Ian.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, follow our website at ripr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.